I chose a very inconvenient time to fall ill. What with the promise of anti-dementor lessons from Lupin, the thought that he might never have to hear his mother's death again, and the fact that Ravenclaw flattened Hufflepuff in their Quidditch match at the end of November, Harry's mood took a definite upturn. Gryffindor were not out of the running after all, although they could not afford to lose another match. Wood became repossessed of his manic energy and worked his team as hard as ever in the chilly haze of rain that persisted into December. Harry saw no hint of a Dementor within the grounds. Dumbledore's anger seemed to be keeping them at their stations at the entrances. 2 weeks before the end of the term, the sky lightened suddenly to a dazzling opaline white, and the muddy grounds were revealed one morning covered in glittering frost. Inside the castle, there was a buzz of Christmas in the air. Professor Flitwick, the charms teacher, had already decorated his classroom with shimmering lights that turned out to be real, fluttering fairies. The students were all happily discussing their plans for the holidays. Both Ron and Hermione had decided to remain at Hogwarts, and though Ron said it was because he couldn't stand 2 weeks with Percy, and Hermione insisted she needed to use the library, Harry wasn't fooled. They were doing it to keep him company, and he was very grateful. To everyone's delight, except Harry's, there was to be another Hogsmeade trip on the very last weekend of the term.
"We can do all our Christmas shopping there," said Hermione. "Mum and Dad would really love those tooth-flossing string mints from Honeydukes."
Resigned to the fact that he would be the only third year staying behind again, Harry borrowed a copy of Witch Broomstick from Wood and decided to spend the day reading up on the different makes. He had been riding one of the school brooms at team practice, an ancient shooting star which was very slow and jerky. He definitely needed a new broom of his own. On the Saturday morning of the Hogsmeade trip, Harry bid goodbye to Ron and Hermione, who were wrapped in cloaks and scarves, then turned up the marble staircase alone and headed back toward Gryffindor Tower. Snow had started to fall outside the windows, and the castle was very still and quiet.
"Psst! Harry!"
He turned halfway along the third-floor corridor to see Fred and George peering out at him from behind a statue of a hump-backed, one-eyed witch.
"What are you doing?" said Harry curiously. "How come you're not going to Hogsmeade?" "We've come to give you a bit of festive cheer before we go," said Fred with a mysterious wink. "Come in here."
He nodded toward an empty classroom to the left of the one-eyed statue. Harry followed Fred and George inside. George closed the door quietly and then turned, beaming, to look at Harry.
"Early Christmas present for you, Harry," he said.
Fred pulled something from inside his cloak with a flourish and laid it on one of the desks. It was a large, square, very worn piece of parchment with nothing written on it. Harry, suspecting one of Fred and George's jokes, stared at it. "What's that supposed to be?"
"This, Harry, is the secret of our success," said George, patting the parchment fondly. "It's a wrench giving it to you," said Fred, "but we decided last night your need's greater than ours."
"Anyway, we know it by heart," said George. "We bequeath it to you. We don't really need it any more."
"And what do I need with a bit of old parchment?" said Harry. "A bit of old parchment?" said Fred, closing his eyes with a grimace as though Harry had mortally offended him. "Explain, George."
"Well, when we were in our first year, Harry, young, carefree, and innocent..." Harry snorted. He doubted whether Fred and George had ever been innocent. "Well, more innocent than we are now, we got into a spot of bother with Filch. We let off a dung bomb in the corridor, and it upset him for some reason, so he hauled us off to his office and started threatening us with the usual detention, disembowelment, and we couldn't help noticing a drawer in one of his filing cabinets marked confiscated and highly dangerous."
"Don't tell me," said Harry, starting to grin. "Well, what would you have done?" said Fred. "George caused a diversion by dropping another dung bomb. I whipped the drawer open and grabbed this."
"It's not as bad as it sounds, you know," said George. "We don't reckon Filch ever found out how to work it. He probably suspected what it was, though, or he wouldn't have confiscated it."
"And you know how to work it?" "Oh, yes," said Fred, smirking. "This little beauty's taught us more than all the teachers in this school."
"You're winding me up," said Harry, looking at the ragged old bit of parchment.
"Oh, are we?" said George.
He took out his wand, touched the parchment lightly, and said, "I solemnly swear that I am up to no good."
And at once thin ink lines began to spread like a spider's web from the point that George's wand had touched. They joined each other, they crisscrossed, they fanned into every corner of the parchment. Then words began to blossom across the top, great curly green words that proclaimed, "Messrs. Mooney, Wormtail, Padfoot and Prongs, purveyors of aids to magical mischief makers, are proud to present the Marauder's Map."
It was a map showing every detail of the Hogwarts castle and grounds, but the truly remarkable thing were the tiny ink dots moving around it, each labelled with a name in minuscule writing. Astounded, Harry bent over it. A labelled dot in the top left corner showed that Professor Dumbledore was pacing his study. The caretaker's cat, Mrs. Norris, was prowling the second floor, and Peeves, the poltergeist, was currently bouncing around the trophy room. And as Harry's eyes travelled up and down the familiar corridors, he noticed something else. This map showed a set of passages he had never entered, and many of them seemed to lead
right into Hogsmeade, said Fred, tracing one of them with his finger. There are seven in all. Now, Filch knows about these four, he pointed them out, but we're sure we're the only ones who know about these. Don't bother with the one behind the mirror on the fourth floor. We used it until last winter, but it's caved in, completely blocked. And we don't reckon anyone's ever used this one because the Whomping Willows planted right over the entrance. But this one here, this one leads right into the cellar of Honeydukes. We've used it loads of times, and as you might have noticed, the entrance is right outside this room, through that one-eyed old crone's hump.
Mooney, Wormtail, Padfoot and Prongs, sighed George, patting the heading of the map. We owe them so much.
Noblemen, working tirelessly to help a new generation of lawbreakers, said Fred solemnly.
Right, said George briskly. Don't forget to wipe it after you've used it, or anyone can read it, Fred said warningly.
Just tap it again and say mischief managed, and it'll go blank.
So, young Harry, said Fred, in an uncanny impersonation of Percy. Mind you behave yourself.
See you in Honeydukes, said George, winking.
They left the room, both smirking in a satisfied sort of way.
Harry stood there, gazing at the miraculous map. He watched the tiny ink Mrs. Norris turn left and pause to sniff at something on the floor. If Filch really didn't know, he wouldn't have to pass the Dementors at all. But even as he stood there, flooded with excitement, something Harry had once heard Mr. Weasley say came floating out of his memory. Never trust anything that can think for itself if you can't see where it keeps its brain.
This map was one of those dangerous magical objects Mr. Weasley had been warning against. Aids for magical mischief makers. But then, Harry reasoned, he only wanted to use it to get into Hogsmeade. It wasn't as though he wanted to steal anything or attack anyone, and Fred and George had been using it for years without anything horrible happening. Harry traced the secret passage to Honeydukes with his finger. Then, quite suddenly, as though following orders, he rolled up the map, stuffed it inside his robes, and hurried to the door of the classroom. He opened it a couple of inches. There was no one outside. Very carefully, he edged out of the room and behind the statue of the one-eyed witch. What did he have to do? He pulled out the map again and saw, to his astonishment, that a new ink figure had appeared upon it, labelled Harry Potter. This figure was standing exactly where the real Harry was standing, about halfway down the third-floor corridor. Harry watched carefully. His little ink self appeared to be tapping the witch with his minute wand. Harry quickly took out his real wand and tapped the statue. Nothing happened. He looked back at the map. The tiniest speech bubble had appeared next to his figure. The word inside said, Descendium.
Descendium, Harry whispered, tapping the stone witch again.
At once, the statue's hump opened wide enough to admit a fairly thin person.
Harry glanced quickly up and down the corridor, then tucked the map away again, hoisted himself into the hole head first, and pushed himself forward. He slid a considerable way down what felt like a stone slide, then landed on cold, damp earth. He stood up, looking around. It was pitch dark. He held up his wand, muttered, "Lumos," and saw that he was in a very narrow, low, earthy passageway. He raised the map, tapped it with the tip of his wand, and muttered, "Mischief managed." The map went blank at once. He folded it carefully, tucked it inside his robes, then, heart beating fast, both excited and apprehensive, he set off. The passage twisted and turned, more like the burrow of a giant rabbit than anything else. Harry hurried along it, stumbling now and then on the uneven floor, holding his wand out in front of him. It took ages, but Harry had the thought of honeydukes to sustain him. After what felt like an hour, the passage began to rise. Panting, Harry sped up, his face hot, his feet very cold. 10 minutes later, he came to the foot of some worn stone steps, which rose out of sight above him. Careful not to make any noise, Harry began to climb. 100 steps, 200 steps. He lost count as he climbed, watching his feet. Then, without warning, his head hit something hard. It seemed to be a trap door. Harry stood there, massaging the top of his head, listening. He couldn't hear any sounds above him. Very slowly, he pushed the trap door open and peered over the edge. He was in a cellar, which was full of wooden crates and boxes. Harry climbed out of the trap door and replaced it. It blended so perfectly with the dusty floor that it was impossible to tell it was there. Harry crept slowly toward the wooden staircase that led upstairs. Now he could definitely hear voices, not to mention the tinkle of a bell and the opening and shutting of a door. Wondering what he ought to do, he suddenly heard a door open much closer at hand. Somebody was about to come downstairs. "And get another box of jelly slugs, dear. They've nearly cleaned us out," said a woman's voice. A pair of feet was coming down the staircase. Harry leapt behind an enormous crate and waited for the footsteps to pass. He heard the man shifting boxes against the opposite wall. He might not get another chance. Quickly and silently, Harry dodged out from his hiding place and climbed the stairs. Looking back, he saw an enormous backside and shiny bald head buried in a box. Harry reached the door at the top of the stairs, slipped through it, and found himself behind the counter of honeydukes. He ducked, crept sideways, and then straightened up. Honeydukes was so crowded with Hogwarts students that no one looked twice at Harry. He edged among them, looking around, and suppressed a laugh as he imagined the look that would spread over Dudley's piggy face if he could see where Harry was now. There were shelves upon shelves of the most succulent-looking sweets imaginable. Creamy chunks of nougat, shimmering pink squares of coconut ice, fat, honey-colored toffees, hundreds of different kinds of chocolate in neat rows. There was a large barrel of every flavor beans, and another of fizzing whizbees, the levitating sherbet balls that Ron had mentioned. Along yet another wall were special effect sweets, Drubal's best blowing gum, which filled a room with bluebell-colored bubbles that refused to pop for days, the strange, splintery, tooth-flossing string mints, tiny black pepper imps, breathe fire for your friends, ice mice, hear your teeth chatter and squeak, peppermint creams shaped like toads, hop realistically in the stomach, fragile sugar-spun quills, and exploding bonbons. Harry squeezed himself through a crowd of 6th years and saw a sign hanging in the furthest corner of the shop, "Unusual Tastes." Ron and Hermione were standing underneath it, examining a tray of blood-flavored lollipops. Harry sneaked up behind them.
"Ugh, no. Harry won't want one of those. They're for vampires, I expect," Hermione was saying. "How about these?" said Ron, shoving a jar of cockroach clusters under Hermione's nose.
"Definitely not," said Harry. Ron nearly dropped the jar.
"Harry!" squealed Hermione. "What are you doing here? How did you..."
"Wow," said Ron, looking very impressed. "You've learnt to apparate."
"Course I haven't," said Harry. He dropped his voice so that none of the 6th years could hear him, and told them all about the Marauder's map.
How come Fred and George never gave it to me? Said Ron, outraged. I'm their brother.
But Harry isn't going to keep it, said Hermione, as though the idea were ludicrous. He's going to hand it in to Professor McGonagall, aren't you, Harry?
No, I'm not, said Harry.
Are you mad? Said Ron, goggling at Hermione. Hand in something that good?
If I hand it in, I'll have to say where I got it. Filch would know Fred and George had nicked it.
But what about Sirius Black? Hermione hissed. He could be using one of the passages on that map to get into the castle. The teachers have got to know.
He can't be getting in through a passage, said Harry quickly. There are 7 secret tunnels on the map, right? Fred and George reckon Filch already knows about 4 of them. And of the other 3, one of them's caved in, so no one can get through it. One of them's got the whomping willow planted over the entrance, so you can't get out of it. And the one I just came through... Well, it's really hard to see the entrance to it down in the cellar, so unless he knew it was there...
Harry hesitated. What if Black did know the passage was there?
Ron, however, cleared his throat significantly and pointed to a notice pasted on the inside of the sweet shop door. By order of the Ministry of Magic, customers are reminded that until further notice, Dementors will be patrolling the streets of Hogsmeade every night after sundown. This measure has been put in place for the safety of Hogsmeade residents and will be lifted upon the recapture of Sirius Black. It is therefore advisable that you complete your shopping well before nightfall. Merry Christmas.
See? Said Ron quietly. I'd like to see Black try and break into Honeydukes with Dementors swarming all over the village. Anyway, Hermione, the Honeydukes owners would hear a break-in, wouldn't they? They'd live over the shop.
Yes, but... Hermione seemed to be struggling to find another problem.
Look, Harry still shouldn't be coming into Hogsmeade. He hasn't got a signed form. If anyone finds out, he'll be in so much trouble. And it's not nightfall yet. What if Sirius Black turns up today, now?
He'd have a job spotting Harry in this, said Ron, nodding through the mullioned windows at the thick, swirling snow.
Come on, Hermione, it's Christmas. Harry deserves a break.
Hermione bit her lip, looking extremely worried.
Are you going to report me? Harry asked her, grinning.
Oh, of course not, but honestly, Harry...
"'Seen the fizzing whizbees, Harry,' said Ron, grabbing him and leading him over to their barrel. "'And the jelly slugs and the acid pops. "'Fred gave me one of those when I was 7. "'It burnt a hole right through my tongue. "'I remember Mum walloping him with her broomstick.'
"'Ron stared broodily into the acid pop box.
"'Reckon Fred'd take a bit of cockroach cluster if I told him they were peanuts.'
"'When Ron and Hermione had paid for all their sweets,' the 3 of them left Honeydukes for the blizzard outside. Hogsmeade looked like a Christmas card. The little thatched cottages and shops were all covered in a layer of crisp snow. There were holly wreaths on the doors and strings of enchanted candles hanging in the trees. Harry shivered. Unlike the other 2, he didn't have his cloak. They headed up the street, heads bowed against the wind, Ron and Hermione shouting through their scarves.
"That's the post office!"
Sonko's is up there.
We could go up to the Shrieking Shack.
Tell you what, said Ron, his teeth chattering. Shall we go for a butterbeer in the 3 Broomsticks?
Harry was more than willing. The wind was fierce and his hands were freezing, so they crossed the road and in a few minutes were entering the tiny inn. It was extremely crowded, noisy, warm, and smoky. A curvy sort of woman with a pretty face was serving a bunch of rowdy warlocks up at the bar.
"'That's Madame Ross Murta,' said Ron. "'I'll get the drink, shall I?'
he added, going slightly red. Harry and Hermione made their way to the back of the room where there was a small vacant table between the window and a handsome Christmas tree which stood next to the fireplace. Ron came back 5 minutes later carrying 3 foaming tankards of hot butter beer.
"'Merry Christmas!' he said happily, raising his tankard.
Harry drank deeply. It was the most delicious thing he'd ever tasted and seemed to heat every bit of him from the inside. A sudden breeze ruffled his hair. The door of the 3 Broomsticks had opened again. Harry looked over the rim of his tankard and choked.
Professors McGonagall and Flitwick had just entered the pub with a flurry of snowflakes, shortly followed by Hagrid, who was deep in conversation with a portly man in a lime-green bowler hat and a pinstripe cloak, Cornelius Fudge, Minister of Magic. In an instant, Ron and Hermione had both placed hands on the top of Harry's head and forced him off his stool and under the table. Dripping with butter beer and crouching out of sight, Harry clutched his empty tankard and watched the teacher's and Fudge's feet move toward the bar, pause, then turn and walk right toward him. Somewhere above him, Hermione whispered, "Mobiliarbus!" The Christmas tree beside their table rose a few inches off the ground, drifted sideways, and landed with a soft thump right in front of their table, hiding them from view. Staring through the dense lower branches, Harry saw four sets of chair legs move back from the table right beside theirs, then heard the grunts and sighs of the teachers and minister as they sat down. Next, he saw another pair of feet wearing sparkly turquoise high heels and heard a woman's voice.
"A small gillywater?"
"Mine," said Professor McGonagall's voice.
"4 pints of mulled mead."
"Ta, Ross Murder," said Hagrid.
"A cherry syrup and soda with ice and umbrella?"
"Mmm," said Professor Flitwick, smacking his lips.
"So you'll be the red currant rum minister."
"Thank you, Rosmerta, my dear," said Fudge's voice. "Lovely to see you again, I must say. Have one yourself, won't you? Come and join us."
"Well, thank you very much, Minister."
Harry watched the glittering heels march away and back again. His heart was pounding uncomfortably in his throat. Why hadn't it occurred to him that this was the last weekend of term for the teachers, too? And how long were they going to sit there? He needed time to sneak back into Honeydukes if he wanted to return to school tonight. Hermione's leg gave a nervous twitch next to him.
"So, what brings you to this neck of the woods, Minister?"
came Madame Rosmerta's voice. Harry saw the lower part of Fudge's thick body twist in his chair, as though he were checking for eavesdroppers. Then he said, in a quiet voice,
"What else, my dear, but Sirius Black? I dare say you heard what happened up at the school at Halloween."
"I did hear a rumour," admitted Madame Rosmerta.
"Did you tell the whole pub, Hagrid?"
said Professor McGonagall exasperatedly.
"Do you think Black's still in the area, Minister?"
whispered Madame Rosmerta.
"I'm sure of it," said Fudge shortly.
"You know that the Dementors have searched the whole village twice?"
said Madame Rosmerta, a slight edge to her voice.
"Scared all my customers away. It's very bad for business, Minister."
"Rosmerta, my dear, I don't like them any more than you do," said Fudge uncomfortably. "Necessary precaution. Unfortunate, but there you are. I've just met some of them. They're in a fury against Dumbledore. He won't let them inside the castle grounds."
"I should think not," said Professor McGonagall sharply. "How are we supposed to teach with those horrors floating around?"
"Hear, hear,"
squeaked tiny Professor Flitwick, whose feet were dangling a foot from the ground.
"All the same," demurred Fudge, "they are here to protect you all from something much worse. We all know what Black's capable of."
"Do you know, I still have trouble believing it," said Madame Rosmerta thoughtfully. "Of all the people to go over to the dark side, Sirius Black was the last I'd have thought. I mean, I remember him when he was a boy at Hogwarts. If you told me then what he was going to become, I'd have said you'd had too much mead."
"You don't know the half of it, Rosmerta," said Fudge gruffly. "The worst he did isn't widely known."
"The worst?"
said Madame Rosmerta, her voice alive with curiosity.
"Worse than murdering all those poor people, you mean?"
"I certainly do," said Fudge.
"I can't believe that. What could possibly be worse?"
"You say you remember him at Hogwarts, Rosmerta," murmured Professor McGonagall. "Do you remember who his best friend was?"
"Naturally,"
said Madame Rosmerta with a small laugh.
Never saw one without the other, did you? The number of times I had them in here, oh, they used to make me laugh. Quite the double act. Sirius Black and James Potter.
Harry dropped his tankard with a loud clunk. Ron kicked him.
Precisely, said Professor McGonagall. Black and Potter, ringleaders of their little gang. Both very bright, of course, exceptionally bright, in fact. But I don't think we've ever had such a pair of troublemakers.
I dunno, chuckled Hagrid. Fred and George Weasley could give 'em a run for their money.
You'd have thought Black and Potter were brothers, chimed in Professor Flitwick. Inseparable.
Of course they were, said Fudge. Potter trusted Black beyond all his other friends. Nothing changed when they left school. Black was best man when James married Lily. Then they named him godfather to Harry. Harry has no idea, of course. You can imagine how the idea would torment him.
Because Black turned out to be in league with you-know-who, whispered Madame Rosmerta.
Worse even than that, my dear.
Fudge dropped his voice and proceeded in a sort of low rumble. Not many people are aware that the Potters knew you-know-who was after them. Dumbledore, who was of course working tirelessly against you-know-who, had a number of useful spies. One of them tipped him off, and he alerted James and Lily at once. He advised them to go into hiding. Well, of course, you-know-who wasn't an easy person to hide from. Dumbledore told them that their best chance was the Fidelius Charm.
How does that work?
Said Madame Rosmerta, breathless with interest. Professor Flitwick cleared his throat.
An immensely complex spell, he said squeakily, involving the magical concealment of a secret inside a single living soul. The information is hidden inside the chosen person, or secret keeper, and is henceforth impossible to find. Unless, of course, the secret keeper chooses to divulge it. As long as the secret keeper refused to speak, you-know-who could search the village where Lily and James were staying for years and never find them, not even if he had his nose pressed against their sitting room window. So Black was the Potter's secret keeper,
whispered Madame Rosmerta.
Naturally, said Professor McGonagall. James Potter told Dumbledore that Black would die rather than tell where they were, that Black was planning to go into hiding himself, and yet Dumbledore remained worried. I remember him offering to be the Potter's secret keeper himself.
He suspected Black,
gasped Madame Rosmerta.
He was sure that somebody close to the Potters had been keeping you-know-who informed of their movements, said Professor McGonagall darkly. Indeed, he had suspected for some time that someone on our side had turned traitor and was passing a lot of information to you-know-who.
But James Potter insisted on using Black.
He did, said Fudge heavily. And then, barely a week after the Fidelius Charm had been performed,
Black betrayed them,
breathed Madame Rosmerta.
He did indeed. Black was tired of his double agent role. He was ready to declare his support openly for you-know-who, and he seemed to have planned this for the moment of the Potter's death. But as we all know, you-know-who met his downfall in little Harry Potter. Powers gone, horribly weakened, he fled. And this left Black in a very nasty position indeed. His master had fallen at the very moment when he, Black, had shown his true colors as a traitor. He had no choice but to run for it.
Filthy, stinking turncoat,
Hagrid said so loudly that half the bar went quiet.
Shh, said Professor McGonagall.
I met him, growled Hagrid. I must have been the last to see him before he killed all them people. It was me what rescued Harry from Lily and James's house after they was killed. Just got him out of the ruins, poor little thing, with a great slash across his forehead and his parents dead. And Sirius Black turns up on that flying motorbike he used to ride.
Never occurred to me what he was doing there. I didn't know he'd been Lillian James's secret keeper. Thought he'd just heard the news of you-know-who's attack and come to see what he could do. White and shaking he was, and you know what I did. I comforted the murdering traitor, Hagrid roared.
Hagrid, please, said Professor McGonagall, keep your voice down.
How was I to know he wasn't upset about Lily and James? It was you-know-who he cared about. And then he says, give Harry to me, Hagrid. I'm his godfather. I'll look after him. Ah, but I'd had me orders from Dumbledore, and I told Black no. Dumbledore said Harry was to go to his aunt and uncle. Black argued, but in the end he gave in. Told me to take his motorbike to get Harry there. I won't need it any more, he says. I should have known there was something fishy going on there. He loved that motorbike. What was he giving it to me for? Why wouldn't he need it any more? The fact was, it was too easy to trace. Dumbledore knew he'd been the Potter's secret keeper. Black knew he was going to have to run for it that night, knew it was a matter of hours before the Ministry was after him. But what if I'd given Harry to him, eh? I bet he'd have pitched him off the bike halfway out to sea. His best friend's son. But when a wizard goes over to the dark side, there's nothing and no one that matters to him any more.
A long silence followed Hagrid's story. Then Madame Rosmerta said with some satisfaction,
"But he didn't manage to disappear, did he? The Ministry of Magic caught up with him next day."
"Alas, if only we had," said Fudge bitterly. "It was not we who found him. It was little Peter Pettigrew, another of the Potter's friends. Maddened by grief, no doubt, and knowing that Black had been the Potter's secret keeper, he went after Black himself."
"Pettigrew, that fat little boy who was always tagging around after them at Hogwarts?" said Madame Rosmerta. "Hero-worshipped Black and Potter," said Professor McGonagall. "Never quite in their league, talent-wise. I was often rather sharp with him. You can imagine how I regret that now."
She sounded as though she had a sudden head cold.
"There now, Minerva," said Fudge kindly. "Pettigrew died a hero's death. Eyewitnesses, muggles, of course, we wiped their memories later, told us how Pettigrew cornered Black. They say he was sobbing, Lily and James, Sirius, how could you? And then he went for his wand. Well, of course, Black was quicker, blew Pettigrew to smithereens."
Professor McGonagall blew her nose and said thickly,
"Stupid boy, foolish boy, he was always hopeless at dueling, should have left it to the Ministry."
"I tell you, if I'd got to Black before little Pettigrew did, I wouldn't have messed around with wands. I'd have ripped him limb from limb,"
Hagrid growled.
"You don't know what you're talking about, Hagrid," said Fudge sharply. "Nobody but trained hit-wizards from the magical law enforcement squad would have stood a chance against Black once he was cornered. I was junior minister in the Department of Magical Catastrophes at the time, and I was one of the first on the scene after Black murdered all those people. I will never forget it. I still dream about it sometimes. A crater in the middle of the street, so deep it had cracked the sewer below. Bodies everywhere, muggles screaming, and Black standing there laughing with what was left of Pettigrew in front of him. A heap of blood-stained robes and a few fragments."
Fudge's voice stopped abruptly. There was the sound of five noses being blown.
"Well, there you have it, Rosmerta," said Fudge thickly. "Black was taken away by 20 members of the magical law enforcement squad, and Pettigrew received the Order of Merlin, first class, which I think was some comfort to his poor mother. Black's been in Azkaban ever since."
Madame Rosmerta let out a long sigh.
"Is it true he's mad, Minister?"
"I wish I could say that he was,"
said Fudge slowly. "I certainly believe his master's defeat unhinged him for a while. The murder of Pettigrew and all those muggles was the action of a cornered and desperate man, cruel, pointless. Yet I met Black on my last inspection of Azkaban. You know, most of the prisoners in there sit, muttering to themselves in the dark. There's no sense in them. But I was shocked at how normal Black seemed. He spoke quite rationally to me. It was unnerving. You'd have thought he was merely bored. Asked if I'd finished with my newspaper. Cool as you please. Said he missed doing the crossword. Yes, I was astounded at how little effect the Dementors seemed to be having on him. And he was one of the most heavily guarded in the place, you know. Dementors outside his door, day and night.
But what do you think he's broken out to do? Said Madame Rosmerta. Good gracious minister, he isn't trying to rejoin you-know-who, is he?
I dare say that is his, eventual plan, said Fudge evasively. But we hope to catch Black long before that. I must say, you-know-who, alone and friendless, is one thing, but give him back his most devoted servant, and I shudder to think how quickly he'll rise again. There was a small chink of glass on wood. Someone had set down their glass.
You know, Cornelius, if you're dining with the headmaster, we'd better head back up to the castle, said Professor McGonagall.
One by one, the pairs of feet in front of Harry took the weight of their owners once more. Hems of cloaks swung into sight, and Madame Rosmerta's glittering heels disappeared behind the bar. The door of the Three Broomsticks opened again. There was another flurry of snow, and the teachers had disappeared.
Harry!
Ron and Hermione's faces appeared under the table. They were both staring at him, lost for words.
Chapter 11, The Firebolt. Harry didn't have a very clear idea of how he had managed to get back into the Honeyduke's cellar, through the tunnel, and into the castle once more. All he knew was that the return trip seemed to take no time at all, and that he hardly noticed what he was doing, because his head was still pounding with the conversation he had just heard. Why had nobody ever told him? Dumbledore, Hagrid, Mr. Weasley, Cornelius Fudge. Why hadn't anyone ever mentioned the fact that Harry's parents had died because their best friend had betrayed them? Ron and Hermione watched Harry nervously all through dinner, not daring to talk about what they'd overheard, because Percy was sitting close by them. When they went upstairs to the crowded common room, it was to find Fred and George had set off half a dozen dung bombs in a fit of end-of-term high spirits. Harry, who didn't want Fred and George asking him whether he'd reached Hogsmeade or not, sneaked quietly up to the empty dormitory and headed straight for his bedside cabinet. He pushed his books aside and quickly found what he was looking for, the leather-bound photo album Hagrid had given him 2 years ago, which was full of wizard pictures of his mother and father. He sat down on his bed, drew the hangings around him, and started turning the pages, searching, until... He stopped on a picture of his parents' wedding day. There was his father waving up at him, beaming, the untidy black hair Harry had inherited standing up in all directions. There was his mother, alight with happiness, arm in arm with his dad, and there, that must be him, their best man. Harry had never given him a thought before. If he hadn't known it was the same person, he would never have guessed it was Black in this old photograph. His face wasn't sunken and waxy, but handsome, full of laughter. Had he already been working for Voldemort when this picture had been taken? Was he already planning the deaths of the two people next to him? Did he realize he was facing 12 years in Azkaban, 12 years that would make him unrecognizable? But the Dementors don't affect him, Harry thought, staring into the handsome laughing face. He doesn't have to hear my mum screaming if they get too close. Harry slammed the album shut, reached over and stuffed it back into his cabinet, took off his robe and glasses and got into bed, making sure the hangings were hiding him from view. The dormitory door opened.
"Harry?"
said Ron's voice uncertainly. But Harry lay still, pretending to be asleep. He heard Ron leave again, and rolled over on his back, his eyes wide open. A hatred such as he had never known before was coursing through Harry like poison. He could see Black laughing at him through the darkness, as though somebody had pasted the picture from the album over his eyes. He watched as though somebody was playing him a piece of film, Sirius Black blasting Peter Pettigrew, who resembled Neville Longbottom, into a thousand pieces. He could hear, though having no idea what Black's voice might sound like, a low excited mutter. "It has happened, my lord. The Potters have made me their secret keeper." And then came another voice, laughing shrilly, the same laugh that Harry heard inside his head whenever the Dementors drew near.
"Harry, you look terrible."
Harry hadn't gotten to sleep until daybreak. He had awoken to find the dormitory deserted, dressed, and gone down the spiral staircase to a common room that was completely empty except for Ron, who was eating a peppermint toad and massaging his stomach, and Hermione, who had spread her homework over three tables.
"Where is everyone?" said Harry. "Gone. It's the first day of the holidays, remember?"
said Ron, watching Harry closely.
"It's nearly lunchtime. I was going to come and wake you up in a minute."
Harry slumped into a chair next to the fire. Snow was still falling outside the windows. Crookshanks was spread out in front of the fire like a large ginger rug.
"You really don't look well, you know,"
Hermione said, peering anxiously into his face.
"I'm fine," said Harry. "Harry, listen," said Hermione, exchanging a look with Ron. "You must be really upset about what we heard yesterday, but the thing is, you mustn't go doing anything stupid." "Like what?" said Harry.
"Like trying to go after Black," said Ron sharply.
Harry could tell they had rehearsed this conversation while he had been asleep. He didn't say anything.
"You won't, will you, Harry?" said Hermione.
"Because Black's not worth dying for," said Ron.
Harry looked at them. They didn't seem to understand at all. "Do you know what I see and hear every time a Dementor gets too near me?" Ron and Hermione shook their heads, looking apprehensive. "I can hear my mum screaming and pleading with Voldemort, and if you'd heard your mum screaming like that, just about to be killed, you wouldn't forget it in a hurry, and if you found out someone who was supposed to be a friend of hers betrayed her and sent Voldemort after her..."
"There's nothing you can do," said Hermione, looking stricken. "The Dementors will catch Black and he'll go back to Azkaban and serve him right."
"You heard what Fudge said. Black isn't affected by Azkaban like normal people are. It's not a punishment for him like it is for the others."
"So what are you saying?" said Ron, looking very tense. "You want to kill Black or something?" "Don't be silly," said Hermione in a panicky voice. "Harry doesn't want to kill anyone, do you, Harry?"
Again, Harry didn't answer. He didn't know what he wanted to do. All he knew was that the idea of doing nothing while Black was at liberty was almost more than he could stand.
"Malfoy knows," he said abruptly. "Remember what he said to me in potions? If it was me, I'd hunt him down myself. I'd want revenge."
"You're going to take Malfoy's advice instead of ours?" said Ron furiously. "Listen, you know what Pettigrew's mother got back after Black had finished with him? Dad told me. The Order of Merlin, first class, and Pettigrew's finger in a box. That was the biggest bit of him they could find. Black's a madman, Harry, and he's dangerous."
"Malfoy's dad must have told him," said Harry, ignoring Ron.
"He was right in Voldemort's inner circle."
"Say you know who, will you?"
interjected Ron angrily.
"So obviously the Malfoys knew Black was working for Voldemort.
And Malfoy'd love to see you blown into about a million pieces like Pettigrew. Get a grip. Malfoy's just hoping you'll get yourself killed before he has to play you at Quidditch."
"Harry, please," said Hermione, her eyes now shining with tears. "Please be sensible. Black did a terrible, terrible thing, but don't put yourself in danger. It's what Black wants. Oh, Harry, you'd be playing right into Black's hands if you went looking for him. Your mum and dad wouldn't want you to get hurt, would they? They'd never want you to go looking for Black."
I'll never know what they'd have wanted because, thanks to Black, I've never spoken to them, said Harry shortly. There was a silence in which Crookshanks stretched luxuriously, flexing his claws. Ron's pocket quivered.
Look, said Ron, obviously casting around for a change of subject. It's the holidays. It's nearly Christmas. Let's go down and see Hagrid. We haven't visited him for ages.
No, said Hermione quickly. Harry isn't supposed to leave the castle, Ron. Yeah, let's go, said Harry, sitting up. And I can ask him how come he never mentioned Black when he told me all about my parents. Further discussion of Sirius Black plainly wasn't what Ron had in mind.
Or we could have a game of chess, he said hastily. Or gobstones. Percy left a set.
No, let's visit Hagrid, said Harry firmly. So they got their cloaks from their dormitories and set off through the portrait hole.
Stand and fight, you yellow-bellied mongrels!
Down through the empty castle and out through the oak front doors. They made their way slowly down the lawn, making a shallow trench in the glittering, powdery snow, their socks and the hems of their cloaks soaked and freezing. The Forbidden Forest looked as though it had been enchanted, each tree smattered with silver, and Hagrid's cabin looked like an iced cake. Ron knocked, but there was no answer.
"He's not out, is he?"
said Hermione, who was shivering under her cloak. Ron had his ear to the door.
"There's a weird noise," he said. "Listen, is that Fang?"
Harry and Hermione put their ears to the door, too. From inside the cabin came a series of low, throbbing moans.
"Think we'd better go and get someone?" said Ron nervously.
"Hagrid!" called Harry, thumping the door. "Hagrid! Are you in there?" There was a sound of heavy footsteps, then the door creaked open. Hagrid stood there with his eyes red and swollen, tears splashing down the front of his leather vest.
"You've heard!"
he bellowed, and he flung himself onto Harry's neck. Hagrid, being at least twice the size of a normal man, this was no laughing matter. Harry, about to collapse under Hagrid's weight, was rescued by Ron and Hermione, who each seized Hagrid under an arm and heaved him back into the cabin. Hagrid allowed himself to be steered into a chair and slumped over the table, sobbing uncontrollably, his face glazed with tears that dripped down into his tangled beard.
"Hagrid, what is it?" said Hermione, aghast.
Harry spotted an official-looking letter lying open on the table.
"What's this, Hagrid?"
Hagrid's sobs redoubled, but he shoved the letter towards Harry, who picked it up and read aloud. "Dear Mr. Hagrid, further to our inquiry into the attack by a hippogriff on a student in your class, we have accepted the assurances of Professor Dumbledore that you bear no responsibility for the regrettable incident."
"Well, that's okay then, Hagrid," said Ron, clapping Hagrid on the shoulder.
But Hagrid continued to sob and waved one of his gigantic hands, inviting Harry to read on. "However, we must register our concern about the hippogriff in question. We have decided to uphold the official complaint of Mr. Lucius Malfoy, and this matter will therefore be taken to the Committee for the Disposal of Dangerous Creatures. The hearing will take place on April the 20th, and we ask you to present yourself and your hippogriff at the committee's offices in London on that date. In the meantime, the hippogriff should be kept tethered and isolated. Yours in fellowship." There followed a list of the school governors.
"Oh," said Ron, "but you said Buckbeak isn't a bad hippogriff, Hagrid. I bet he'll get off."
"You don't know them gargoyles at the Committee for the Disposal of Dangerous Creatures," choked Hagrid, wiping his eyes on his sleeve. "They've got it in for interesting creatures."
A sudden sound from the corner of Hagrid's cabin made Harry, Ron, and Hermione whip around. Buckbeak, the hippogriff, was lying in the corner, chomping on something that was oozing blood all over the floor.
"I couldn't leave him tied up out there in the snow," choked Hagrid, "all on his own, at Christmas."
Harry, Ron, and Hermione looked at one another. They had never seen eye to eye with Hagrid about what he called interesting creatures and other people called terrifying monsters. On the other hand, there didn't seem to be any particular harm in Buckbeak. In fact, by Hagrid's usual standards, he was positively cute.
"'You'll have to put up a good, strong defense, Hagrid,' said Hermione, sitting down and laying a hand on Hagrid's massive forearm. "'I'm sure you can prove Buckbeak is safe.'
"'Won't make no difference,' sobbed Hagrid. "'Them disposal devils, they're all in Lucius Malfoy's pocket, scared of him. "'And if I lose the case, Buckbeak—'
Hagrid drew his finger swiftly across his throat, then gave a great wail and lurched forward, his face in his arms.
"'What about Dumbledore, Hagrid?' said Harry.
"'He's done more than enough for me already,' groaned Hagrid. "'Got enough on his plate, what with keeping them Dementors out of the castle, and Sirius Black lurking around.'
Ron and Hermione looked quickly at Harry, as though expecting him to start berating Hagrid for not telling him the truth about Black. But Harry couldn't bring himself to do it, not now that he saw Hagrid so miserable and scared.
"'Listen, Hagrid,' he said, "'you can't give up. Hermione's right. You just need a good defense. You can call us as witnesses.
I'm sure I've read about a case of hippogriff baiting,' said Hermione thoughtfully, "'where the hippogriff got off.' "'I'll look it up for you, Hagrid, and see exactly what happened.'
Hagrid howled still more loudly. Harry and Hermione looked at Ron to help them.
"'Shall I make a cup of tea?' said Ron.
Harry stared at him.
"'It's what my mum does whenever someone's upset,'
Ron muttered, shrugging. At last, after many more assurances of help, with a steaming mug of tea in front of him, Hagrid blew his nose on a handkerchief the size of a tablecloth and said,
"'You're right. I can't afford to go to pieces. Got to pull myself together.'
Fang, the boarhound, came timidly out from under the table and laid his head on Hagrid's knee.
"'I've not been myself lately,'
said Hagrid, stroking Fang with one hand and mopping his face with the other.
"'Worried about Buckbeak, and no one liking me classes?'
"'We do like them,'
lied Hermione at once.
"'Yeah, they're great,'
said Ron, crossing his fingers under the table. "'How are the flubberworms?'
"'Dead,'
said Hagrid gloomily.
"'Too much lettuce.'
"'Oh, no,'
said Ron, his lip twitching.
"'And them Dementors make me feel ruddy terrible and all,'
said Hagrid with a sudden shudder.
"'Got to walk past them every time I want a drink in the Three Broomsticks. "'S like being back in Azkaban.'
He fell silent, gulping his tea. Harry, Ron and Hermione watched him breathlessly. They had never heard Hagrid talk about his brief spell in Azkaban before. After a pause, Hermione said timidly,
"'Is it awful in there, Hagrid?'
"'You've no idea,'
said Hagrid quietly.
"'Never been anywhere like it. "'Thought I was going mad. "'Kept going over horrible stuff in me mind. "'The day I got expelled from Hogwarts, "'day me dad died, "'day I had to let Norbert go.'
"'His eyes filled with tears. "'Norbert was the baby dragon Hagrid had once won in a game of cards.
"'You can't really remember who you are after a while.' And you can't see the point of living at all. I used to hope I'd just die in me sleep. When they let me out, it was like being born again. Everything came flooding back. It was the best feeling in the world, mind. The Dementors weren't keen on letting me go.
But you were innocent, said Hermione.
Hagrid snorted.
Think that matters to them? They don't care. Long as they've got a couple of hundred humans stuck there with them, so they can leech all the happiness out of them, they don't give a damn who's guilty and who's not.
Hagrid went quiet for a moment, staring into his tea, and then he said quietly,
Thought of just letting Buckbeak go, trying to make him fly away. But how do you explain to a hippogriff it's got to go into hiding? And I'm scared of breaking the law.
He looked up at them, tears leaking down his face again.
I don't ever want to go back to Azkaban.
The trip to Hagrid's, though far from fun, had nevertheless had the effect Ron and Hermione had hoped. Though Harry had by no means forgotten about Black, he couldn't brood constantly on revenge if he wanted to help Hagrid win his case against the Committee for the Disposal of Dangerous Creatures. He, Ron and Hermione went to the library the next day and returned to the empty common room laden with books that might help prepare a defense for Buckbeak. The three of them sat in front of the roaring fire, slowly turning the pages of dusty volumes about famous cases of marauding beasts, speaking occasionally when they ran across something relevant. "'Here's something. There was a case in 1722, but the hippogriff was convicted. Ugh, look what they did to it. That's disgusting. This might help. Look.' A manticore savaged someone in 1296, and they let the manticore off. Oh, no. That was only because everyone was too scared to go near it. Meanwhile, in the rest of the castle, the usual magnificent Christmas decorations had been put up, despite the fact that hardly any of the students remained to enjoy them. Thick streamers of holly and mistletoe were strung along the corridors, mysterious lights shone from inside every suit of armour, and the great hall was filled with its usual 12 Christmas trees, glittering with golden stars. A powerful and delicious smell of cooking pervaded the corridors, and by Christmas Eve it had grown so strong that even Scabbers poked his nose out of the shelter of Ron's pocket to sniff hopefully at the air. On Christmas morning, Harry was woken by Ron throwing his pillow at him. "Oi, presents!" Harry reached for his glasses and put them on, squinting through the semi-darkness to the foot of his bed, where a small heap of parcels had appeared. Ron was already ripping the paper off his own presents. "Another sweater from Mum, maroon again. See if you've got one." Harry had. Mrs. Weasley had sent him a scarlet sweater with the Gryffindor lion knitted on the front, also a dozen home-baked mince pies, some Christmas cake, and a box of nut brittle. As he moved all these things aside, he saw a long, thin package lying underneath. "What's that?" said Ron, looking over, a freshly unwrapped pair of maroon socks in his hand. "Dunno." Harry ripped the parcel open and gasped as a magnificent, gleaming broomstick rolled out onto his bedspread. Ron dropped his socks and jumped off his bed for a closer look. "I don't believe it," he said hoarsely. It was a firebolt, identical to the dream broom Harry had gone to see every day in Diagon Alley. Its handle glittered as he picked it up. He could feel it vibrating and let go. It hung in midair, unsupported, at exactly the right height for him to mount it. His eyes moved from the golden registration number at the top of the handle right down to the perfectly smooth, streamlined birch twigs that made up the tail.
"Who sent it to you?"
said Ron in a hushed voice. "Look and see if there's a card," said Harry. Ron ripped apart the firebolt's wrappings.
"Nothing. Blimey, who'd spend that much on you?"
"Well," said Harry, feeling stunned, "I'm betting it wasn't the Dursleys."
"I bet it was Dumbledore,"
said Ron, now walking around and around the firebolt, taking in every glorious inch.
"He sent you the invisibility cloak anonymously."
"That was my dad's, though," said Harry. "Dumbledore was just passing it on to me. He wouldn't spend hundreds of galleons on me. He can't go giving students stuff like this."
"That's why he wouldn't say it was from him," said Ron, "in case some git like Malfoy said it was favoritism." "Hey, Harry,"
Ron gave a great whoop of laughter,
"Malfoy, wait till he sees you on this. He'll be sick as a pig. This is an international standard broom, this is."
"I can't believe this," Harry muttered, running a hand along the firebolt, while Ron sank onto Harry's bed, laughing his head off at the thought of Malfoy.
"Who?" "I know," said Ron, controlling himself. "I know who it could have been. Lupin."
"What?" said Harry, now starting to laugh himself.
"Lupin? Listen, if he had this much gold, he'd be able to buy himself some new robes." "Yeah, but he likes you," said Ron, "and he was away when your Nimbus got smashed, and he might have heard about it and decided to visit Diagon Alley and get this for you."
"What do you mean, he was away?" said Harry. "He was ill when I was playing in that match."
"Well, he wasn't in the hospital wing,"
said Ron. "I was there, cleaning out the bedpans on that detention from Snape, remember?"
Harry frowned at Ron. "I can't see Lupin affording something like this."
"What are you two laughing about?"
Hermione had just come in, wearing her dressing gown and carrying Crookshanks, who was looking very grumpy, with a string of tinsel tied round his neck.
"Don't bring him in here," said Ron, hurriedly snatching Scabbers from the depths of his bed and stowing him in his pajama pocket.
But Hermione wasn't listening. She dropped Crookshanks onto Seamus's empty bed and stared open-mouthed at the firebolt.
"Oh, Harry, who sent you that?"
"No idea," said Harry. "There wasn't a card or anything with it."